off the ball rugby.
He's a very good player, and on his day, he's a massive threat on the wing. So that is a bit of competition that we need at the left wing, with James Lowe not firing as good as he has in the recent past.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Racing Pod
on Off the Ball
with William Hill. Who you got? 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie. The Racing Pod
on Off the Ball
with William Hill. 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.
And you're welcome to the Racing Pod on Off the Ball with John Duggan. It's not a regular show this week because we're marking a century of episodes, and we've got a special guest in studio, Grand National winning jockey Patrick Mullins. I'm going to introduce the great man here now. From County Carlo, 35-year-old Patrick has been a champion amateur national hunt jockey a record 17 times. And as we record this interview, he's on, you might correct me if I'm wrong, 898 winners in Ireland and the UK, including 9 Cheltenham Festival winners. As many people will know, Patrick's father is the champion trainer, Willie Mullins. Patrick is assistant trainer down in Close Sutton in Carlow. His grandfather, Paddy Mullins, trained Don Run, the great mayor. On Saturday, April the 5th this year, a day to remember in the Mullins household, Patrick rode Nick Rocket to win the Aintree Grand National, the most famous race in the world, and the horse trained by Willie. So a family affair like it was with Ruby Walsh and Ted Walsh back in 2000, 25 years on. Patrick Mullins, you're very welcome to the Racing Pod and here on News Talk Off the Ball.
Thanks very much for having me, John. Great to be here.
Now, it's been some year for you, but some week for the Mullins family. I was watching on television last weekend, Ethical Diamond, 28-1, first ever runner in a flat race, the Breeders' Cup Turf in Del Mar in California, Dylan Bramock Monagle, and it wins.
Absolutely extraordinary. I mean, I think we were as shocked as anyone. I think anyone who saw Willie's interview afterwards could tell that. We sent him there because we thought if he finished 6th or 7th, he'd pay for his trip and it'd be, you know, great to go there. It's something new, something different. And, you know, as Willie has always said to me, if you're not in the Derby, you can't win the Derby. So if you're not in, you can't win.
And it was fast ground at Del Mar. And where were you watching it?
I was actually down in Jane Mangan, had a little Breeders' Cup party. So myself and Sarah Rose, my partner, went down there, and we were as shocked as anyone down there. There was a bottle of champagne popped afterwards. So I was a pity I didn't get to go over, but Willie was over there. Dave Casey was down in Australia, so someone had to stay and steer the ship.
Did you go mad shouting at that TV?
No, it was so unexpected, you know. And he was back in last. He was drawn in Hawaii. He was drawn 14-14, and gave us even less hope. But Dylan Brown McGonigal is just, he's just a bit special, isn't he?
Why did you take a punt to go there?
He was supposed to go down to the Melbourne Cup, is what we were hoping for. We were hoping he'd be a very good jump source.
Yes.
And that didn't quite materialise. I managed to get him beat in Cheltenham and Ayr last year, and we were very disappointed. Then we went back flat race with him, and he's been fantastic. He won Royal Ascot, he won the Ebor at York. The plan was to go to Melbourne, but because he has a screw in a fetlock, which is like his ankle from an old injury, he's not qualified to go down there. So we had to find somewhere else to send him with good, quick ground. And David Casey came up with the plan of going to Del Mar, and Willie said, why not?
What did Willie say to you about what it was like over there?
I think it's all very much a blur for Willie. He was travelling in, but completely different. I mean, the crowd size isn't maybe as big as Cheltenham,
no.
But obviously everything else is Americanized. It's big, it's bold, it's brash. And I think he got as big a thrill out of that because it was so unexpected and it was so left field.
Yeah.
I think he got as big a thrill out of that as anything he ever did.
Has this been always in the blood for you because you grew up in a racing family? Is this all you've known, horses? You've done other things, but is this what it's been like for you since a small boy?
Yeah, I was a big Man United fan growing up, and I was hoping to be David Beckham or Roy Keane. And I remember going down to do the camp in Waterford twice, and not getting picked to go
soccer schools.
Yeah, so wasn't quite good enough. But I was under 11 Player of the Year in Thomastown United one year, so we still have that trophy at home. But no, look, and it's funny. I remember being younger and thinking, you know, you hear about people kind of getting to a stage where, geez, what else would I do? Or what else would I know? And I remember thinking, that won't be me. But I'm 35 now, and it is a case of I don't know anything else. It is all we've done since I sat on a road in a schooling race when I was 12. That's when I switched over from soccer to racing. I haven't regretted it yet, anyway.
What have you learned about the horse? So what's your relationship like with the animal over the years, and how you got to know them?
Well, it's a funny one, like, as in it, every horse is different, and that's what I've learned. Every horse has a personality, like people. And at home now, when I do the board in the morning, so I decide who rides what horse, and, you know, you're trying to pair them up, and you're looking at, maybe if you have an anxious horse, you're looking for someone who's very cool, calm, relaxed. If you have a horse that's very lazy, you want someone who's a bit more animated. Obviously, smaller horses want lighter people, heavier horses might want heavier people. And sometimes people and horses just don't get on, the same way people and people don't get on. So you do have to learn their individual traits. I mean, I used to love riding Sharjah, and he was a horse that liked passing horses. So if you rode him from the front, he didn't enjoy it. But if you had him at the back and passing horses, he'd be much better. But then you've got a horse like Undersow, and you learn that they just want to rock and roll and catch me if you can. So they're all different.
What's a day in the life for you then, like, Patrick? Because you're assistant trainer to Willie now. You're riding as an amateur. Have you got a very set routine of, this is my day during the week, this is my day weekends when I go racing?
Yeah, well, it's a bit different now than last year. We have a one-year-old baby at home, so first of all, I get
What's
up...
What's the baby's name?
Winter with a Y, just to really make her life complicated. So, but we call her Winnie, so like Winnie the Pooh. But so I get up and get the bottle first, and put the baby in the bottle in the bed with Sarah, and then I head off to the barn, off to the yard, and like I said, do the board. So the board changes every day, because you'll have jockeys in on some days, you'll have horses going racing, people are sick, horses are off, so it's chopping and changing. And then I'm on the ground. The last 3 years, I sprained my ankle running the track for the part of each one year, not even riding it. And I came home and stayed on the ground for 6 weeks. And I kind of decided, I kind of liked being on the ground because I can see more and be involved in more rather than riding one horse on a lot. So the last 3 years I've been on the ground. Every lot then I'll get things organised, get horses to where they're going. Willie will come up then and he'll... might chop or change a few of them, but the bulk of the work is done, and Willie then has a bit more time for other things. So that's the main thing now. I'm definitely more involved in the training than the riding recently.
So you would take advice and input from the jockeys that are doing the lots, are going around with the horses every morning. I've been down there, it's an amazing facility in Close Sutton. And then your own eye, and over the years I'm sure you get to see things that you wouldn't have seen maybe 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah, and Willie's always been very adamant that, you know, you have to see the horses every day. You have to see the shape of them and how they change. And sometimes you can see a horse getting light too quickly, and you think, well, you know, is there something bothering them? So you might back off and you'll check, you know, are they eating right? Or you get the physio to look at them. Is there a little muscle causing them a bit of pain that maybe they're just, you know, you can see that in them sometimes. And, you know, my grandfather would have been a big one for that. It's in the eye. And Willie hasn't gone very modern yet. You know, there's no heart monitors. There's no, you know, we do weigh the horses, but it's we don't train them off their weights. It is for Willie and from his father, Paddy, your eye is the number one.
It's a big operation. It's a big business. It's not just a race yard for sport. It's business.
It's got that way. I mean, it's the yard has exploded in the last, you know, probably 15 years. After the 2008 crash, obviously, there was a big change. But we were lucky that Rich Ritchie came to us, bought a lot of good horses, and we came out of that stronger and got a lot of... then we've got a lot of English owners in. So when my father started training, all the good horses were sold to England. And eventually he was riding on a horse. He bought a horse called Wither Witch at the sales in Goss, training to win the Leopards on Christmas. And he said, this is the horse that I'm going to be a trainer with rather than a trader. So instead of selling the horse for his full value to England, he kept a third of himself and he got two other people to buy the other two thirds. He went to Cheltenham with the horse. He was 40 years old at this stage.
1996,
Wither Witch. And rode the horse in the Champion Bumper himself when he was the Irish banker. And back then, there wasn't a guarantee to be an Irish winner.
Yes.
So didn't get Richard and Woody, got himself, missed the start, and still won. And still won. But that's, you know, that's how it's turned around. But Willie made a conscious decision to be a trainer, not a trader.
And the patience is interesting because I'm looking at approximately, Patrick, say the first 15 years, I think you had 15 Cheltenham winners, and then the next 15 years, you had 85. Yeah. Jasmine DeVoe, the 100th one, mm-hmm. when you rode the bumper winners. So it's been a testament to patience, to building it slowly, and then being able to manage it when it's expanded.
Yeah, and look, Cheltenham has changed. It was 3 days of yes. maybe six races, and now it's 4 days of seven races. So there's more races, more opportunity. But what I can never get over with Willie is the hunger and the ambition. I mean, he's 69 now. He's just gone all around the world there to go to Del Mar, to Melbourne and back back to Ireland. But it's always, you know, there's plenty of people who can maybe train horses as well as Willie. But as you say, to make it as big as it is, you have to be able to handle, and I'm only beginning to see this now being more involved in it, is handle the owners, handle the staff, handle the disappointments, and to keep bouncing back, keep buying next year's horses, keep getting new owners, keep getting new staff, keep retaining your owners and retaining your staff. You know, and he's 69. You know, a lot of people his age are retired, but my grandfather trained more or less till he stopped, and I think Willie will probably do something similar.
Do you want to follow in his footsteps?
Yeah, I'd definitely like to train. I'd like to ride as long as I can. Like Willie rode till he was 40, and Wichita winner is 40, so we have to try get one of 41 maybe.
You want to get to 1,000?
Want to get to 1,000 winners if I can. I'm on 898. So hopefully, you know, I generally ride somewhere between 30 and 40 winners a year. So hopefully we can get there before I'm 40, and that'd be nice. I think there's not many Irish-based jockeys have done it, but not many Irish-based jockeys are riding for Willie Mullins either.
You talk about the depth of the training operation, the different things you have to do. What's the hardest thing in the training operation?
I think it is the disappointments. And, you know, obviously we're very successful, but our strike rate is still maybe 33%, which means that for every 10 horses, 7 of them get beat. And, you know, we buy a lot of expensive horses. So you put your name and judgment on the line there. And, you know, a lot of them don't work out. And then also you have horses that get injured, and whether it's just for a season or a few weeks, but you know, owners have their hopes and dreams of making the Leopardstown or making the Punchdown, and you have to tell them, you know, we have to wait a year. It's constant disappointment, and being able to not let that get on top of you is obviously easier when you have the success we have, but it's always there. Yeah,
and managing that, maybe it can't get too high, can't get too low, that you have to just manage the mood, put it out of your mind and just move on to the next day.
Yeah, and that's where Willie's very good. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, Willie is so late with all his decisions. He's always the last minute. And I can see why now, because to manage all the things he's managing, that's how he handles it. Now, Aidan O'Brien is obviously very different. You know, Aidan is probably a micromanager and a perfectionist. And Willie is much more hands-off. Different ways of skinning the cat.
Yeah, sense and feel. What about then being a jockey? Why are you an amateur? Is it your height, your frame? I mean, why did you not turn pro, for example?
Yeah, look, I was always very tall. My father was an amateur as well. And when I started riding at 16, Willie said to me that you'll probably get to your 21. So that was always, it was never thought to be a professional. You know, thought was to be like my dad. And I wake up at 11 and a half stone, which is maybe 73 kilos, somewhere around there. To be a professional, I'd want to be 10 stone 12, 10 stone 10, which still be heavy for a professional. You know, I need to be 4 or 5 kilos lighter every week, every day. And that was a trade-off I didn't want to do. I'd just be even grumpier than I am now.
Good to know Kay and Ear in this chat anyway, Patrick. Just in terms of then being an amateur, there's limitations. You can only ride in some of these, say, professional races.
Yeah, so in Ireland, there's huge opportunities for amateurs. There's generally one amateur race every day.
Yeah.
The other 6 professional races. And then you can ride in 21 race against professional in a season.
Okay.
So I have to choose my professional races very carefully. However, in England, there's no limit because there's a lot less amateur races, so they have a different system. So in England, those races don't count. I can go to Cheltenham or Aintree and they don't count. But in Ireland, you do have to choose your professional races quite carefully.
So the Bumper is a race I love. Every race meeting, it's not a race with obstacles like hurdles or fences. It's a flat race for National Hunt horses. And you're, I would say, the king of the bumpers. You ride most of your races in bumpers. Is there you've ridden so many bumpers, Patrick. Is there a rhythm to a bumper that you can understand how it's going generally during it after a mile of maybe the 2 miles?
Yeah, they're very different than jumps races. You know, so while I ride every week, I don't ride in jumps race every week. So you're riding young horses. So, and oftentimes, because they're all starting out, no one wants to go a real strong gallop. So generally they are ran at slightly slower gallops than, say, jumps races. They can be messy. You obviously have young horses and you obviously have, you know, oftentimes a lot of younger amateur riders as well. So you're at the last card, the last race of the day. You've got the worst of the ground. I like to generally be forward and be wide. I get to choose my own destiny that way. You know, if you're in behind people, you can get knocked down. They're called bumpers because they're like bumper cars. That's where it comes from. So you like to keep it as simple as you can. Getting the horse settled is the big thing, conserving energy. And Willie's horses would generally be a little bit keener than other horses. I remember riding for Gordon Elliott and they were so, the horse was so relaxed. Obviously, a different way of training. Whereas our horses would always kind of lie on you a bit. So you are trying to always kind of settle them and slow them down. But there is no better feeling than when you do give them miniature rein and just the power just comes up.
Cousin Vinny, 2008, you're 18, you're at Cheltenham and you win on the bumper. That must have been something that you'll never forget.
Ah, sure, that was magic. 18 years old, I had to get out of school. I was in Clongowes College and all the guys were watching it back at home. I didn't know I was riding him until I was riding until Monday. The race was meant to be on Wednesday. It was called off because of high winds.
I remember I was there, yeah.
So there were 10 races on the day. So we was in the pitch dark. It was so dark going out to the start. And I'd won on 4 or 5 of the horses that had run the race. Ruby was riding apt approach. And my plan was very simply follow Ruby. When I started riding the bumpers, it was follow Nina. And I just said, we'll just follow Ruby. So I followed Ruby. He was an apt approach. We were handy away. I remember at the top of the hill, nearly clipping Barry Connell's heels, coming down the hill. And Willie had said to me that he remembers coming down the hill in Champion Bumper on a horse called Kahana Bridge in 95. And he waited and waited and they never came back. And he just said, you've got to kick early. You've got to kick earlier than you would at home. And hitting the road before the home bend and kicking there, hitting the front around the home bend. And it took forever to get up the straight. I mean, it's dark. The rail stops. I can hear the crowd. I can kind of feel the horses either side of me. Nina Carby was second. David Russell was third. Zarito and Corsky Royale. And crossing the line, I mean, I didn't dream I'd ever get to ride a Cheltenham winner. I thought it'd be too heavy. And back then, I think it was Willie's 10th or 12th Cheltenham winner. It wasn't like we had winners every year, multiple winners every year. It was very different then. And to have, you know, to have my mother and father there, that was a special one, yeah.
That's right up there. That's right up there.
Yeah, you don't forget your first. Yeah.
Who is, I'm really interested to hear this, the best bumper horse you've ever ridden?
Oh, Jesus, it's hard to say. I mean, Champagne Fever was very good. Fasta Vega was very good. Cousin Vinny, obviously, was the first to do the Cheltenham and Punchestown double. Jasmine DeVoe was obviously very good. It'd be hard to split them, but look, if I could ride any of them again, I suppose I'd ride Cousin Vinny again. He was special. He wasn't pretty. He wasn't flashy. He used to wheel one of his legs around. He didn't have a particularly great walk, but he could go right.
You talk about Ruby Walsh there. I'm sure he's somebody you looked up to and got advice from when you were young.
Asher Ruby was the idol, yeah. You know, he was God, and he changed the way people rode, I think. He had a very unique style. He'd sit in and around a horse. You know, a lot of the jockeys now sit on top of horses, and you're like flat jockeys, and it's not better or worse, it's just a different style, but he was very much a horseman. To be able to handle Paul Nicholls and Ruby and Willie at the same time was incredible. You know, back then, again, all the good horses were in England. You know, Paul Nicholls, Ricardo Starr, Denman, Big Bucks, Masterminded, and Ruby was riding him. An Irishman was riding him, not an Englishman. Fiercely competitive, fiercely intelligent, and very good at advice. I mean, now I'm at the part of my career where people are asking me for advice, and you know, if you're riding against someone, you don't particularly want to give them any advice. But, you know, Ruby always gave me advice. He never fobbed me off. He always gave me advice. And I try to do the same if I can when I'm asked. And, yeah.
You talk about maybe the Cousin Vinny race there and what was going on. A lot goes on in racing. Is there a lot of chat? Is there a lot of shouting during a race? You're dealing with people you know. It's a strange sport because you're competitors during the event and then you sit beside each other in the weigh room afterwards or beforehand.
Yeah. Yeah, and
in the dressing room, as it were.
And look, so different people clash as well. And you might clash with someone on a day, but the next day, it's fine. You know, you have to. You can't go around having people. One of the first things my father said to me was, "You should know everyone in the race's name, because if you need to ask them for a favour in the race, if I say, John, give me some room, you're more inclined to give me a room rather than just me saying, give me some room. You know, just someone's name. If they like you, they might do you a favour. If they're coming back and their race is done, and you just need a bit of help." But yeah, and Ruby was great for, it's like chess, or, you know, you can move pieces around. I remember riding the race one day and I was getting a lovely run down the inside, down to the last and punched down, and Ruby was coming on the outside and he let a roar on your Mac and Ruby was stuck in a pocket. There was four horses. We let it roar Danny Mac in front to watch me and my inside. So he pulled in, opened the gap for Ruby, and Ruby got through and won. And that's part of the game. I'd be very vocal. I would use my voice as an aid. To me, you should ride as many horses as you can in a race. Sometimes that means, and you have to shout at someone when you're going that speed. Like you can't ask. You have to demand. Some people don't talk. I would talk a lot, and I probably got that from Ruby, I think.
Hurdles and fences, then. Do you enjoy being a jockey over those obstacles? Do you find it, is there a fear in any way? I remember I spoke to Davy Russell last year down in Cork when he did his book out, and he went through all the injuries he had, and then he spoke, but he said, but he didn't feel any fear, didn't find it dangerous.
Yeah.
How do you find it?
I had someone ask me this recently, you know, is there a fear?
Yeah.
And no, there's not a fear of getting injured. There's a fear of falling off, or a fear of putting the horse on the ground. You're making a mistake that ends your race. I always think, you hear every day on the radio about people getting killed in your car, but you get into your car. So I'm a very strong believer of, when your time is up, your time is up. You see people getting killed all the time, or getting injured all the time, whether it's boxing or rugby or football, whatever. So no, I don't think there's a fear in that sense. There's a fear of making a mistake and ending your race. Yes, that's a nervousness, but I presume everyone has that. And as regards riding over hurdles and fences, I'd love to be professional. I'd love to ride more over hurdles and fences. It's riding a good horse over fences is the best thrill you can have. You know, you're riding a 500 kilo horse over a 5 foot fence at 35 mile an hour. And when that's right, there's nothing better.
So how much of a buzz then was Gaelic Warrior winning a grade one at Aintree for you then on Grand National Week earlier this year?
Yeah, that was really special. He's a horse. Obviously, I'd had a big win on him in Limerick the year before. I'd ridden him a few times then during the year, and he'd been second. I was surprised I got the chance to ride him. Paul, he hadn't had a great preparation. He'd missed Cheltenham. Paul wanted to go over MC Gardens, who'd had a better preparation. I got back with Gaelic Warrior, and the bowl at Aintree is an iconic race. I remember Florida Pearl winning it, and like Florida Pearl was our first big horse, and I think that I won a race that he won. Gave me a huge thrill. And obviously Rich Ritchie is an owner who I've had an awful lot of look for, but he's put an awful lot of trust in me. You know, the likes of Sharjah, Jackadam, Duvan, Annie Power, Faheen. We've had some great days together. So it was brilliant to do it in those pink and green colours. But yeah, to beat professionals in an open grade one race at one of the major festivals, that's the dream, isn't it?
So Patrick, Nick Rocket, a horse that you rode in the bumper when he started his career, and he won the Thiestes Chase at Gordon Park, which Hedge Hunter won, which number 6 Valverde won in the past. Always a good trial for the Grand National. Then he won the Bobby Joe Chase in preparation for the Grand National. On the morning of the race, did you feel, I've got a squeak here, there's a lottery element to it, but did you feel, well, this horse is in good nick, we have a chance?
Yeah, I thought we had a great chance of getting to the last fence in with a squeak, but at the back of my head, I thought he had too much weight. So there was no real thing of this horse could win. It was this horse could run well, and I should be enjoying myself. And I remember I rode him out that morning, and he'd been quite on his toes. Alice Plunkett had wanted to do an interview, and we couldn't because he wouldn't stand still. And that worried me because I just thought, are you going to lose your head in the preliminaries? Because he was just buzzed. But as it turned out, in the preliminaries himself, he was very relaxed. So I don't know what got into him that morning, but anyway.
So during the race, I watched the race back last night. It was just a dream. He just seemed to travel beautifully throughout the whole thing.
Yeah, the trouble started. We were coming out of the parade ring, and in Aintree, you have to go out under the stand. It's very unusual. And the horse, a couple in front of me, Brave Man's Game, planted, just got a fright, didn't want to go out. So there was a bit of a clog. And you imagine, like I said, these horses are ready. You know, there's an energy, and there was a bit of a traffic jam, so we got out and got around him, which was great, but it meant we got down to the start a little late. So I wanted to be somewhere in the middle. Some guys want to go down the inside. Paul's gone down the inside the last couple of times on I Am Maximus. Some guys want to be wide, because it's a straight start, so you can line up wide, stay out of trouble. But I like the middle. It gives you options to go left or right. So I burrowed into the line beside Brian Hayes. He gave me a little bit of room, and we got a great start. We got too good a start. And it's funny, I had one of our owners has sent me a text earlier in the day saying, you know, just make sure now you don't lose your head over the first few fences. And for some reason, that came into my head going out to the first. I was like, we want to just take back here now. We don't want to get, use too much energy. And he just jumped and settled so brilliantly. I've ridden in the race a few times, and some, you know, there's always someone jumping across you, or you miss a jump, or you lose your rhythm, or you just can't get into a momentum. But the first mile was just, he had a little skew at Beecher's Brook, which maybe back in 20 years ago might have been a bit more of a serious error, but he found his feet well, and yeah, it went so swimmingly.
When did you feel during the race, you know what, I might have a squeak here?
It's funny, when I was on Borough Saint from the back of Beecher's Brook the second time, I thought to myself, we could win this. That never really came into my head this year. It was always a case of, we're going well, take back, keep your powder dry. I remember going down to the canal turn the second time, Rachel Blackmore was just on my inside, and I was wondering, had I come too far back? Had I lost too much ground? So we got around the canal turn, and we've just started to make ground, and I've just been clicking at him, and I'm sitting on his back, and sometimes you know you've a load up your sleeve, and sometimes you're just sitting there, and you don't know until you look under the bonnet what's there. And that was the feeling I was getting. I didn't know. I was afraid to move because I thought maybe we're just running on fresh air. But once we've crossed the Melling Road down to the second last, I can feel him starting to come alive then.
What's going through your mind at that moment?
Again, it never, with Borough Saint a couple of times, it crossed my mind at that stage, we could win this. And I was probably nearly in front of that stage, where we were 7th or 8th this time, so a bit different. But there's a big group of horses, we've slowed up. Paul Townend has appeared around my outside, and I am Maximus. And Hewick is coming back, and I've given my fella a squeeze to go forward, because I don't want Paul to come around and maybe put us in a pocket. You know, just you want daylight, you want clear view of the fences. So my fella has gone forward, we've gone down the second last, we've winged it, we've landed in front, and I've thought, oh, bollocks. I don't want to be in front this far out. In my ideal, I'm going to the elbow with something a length in front of me and coming to win then. I'm thinking, I don't want to be here. It says, you know, if I got beaten, that's the part I'd be pulling my hair about. So I've sat, taken him back, and just conserved down to the last. Then Paul has come up my outside, and I am Maximus again. I'm thinking, ideal, he'll come with me. And my fella's jumped the last so well again, I've ended up in front again, and I'm still thinking, I don't want to have to commit now, because it's such a long running. And if you're in front, you're doing the donkey work, you've nothing to aim at, whereas you're behind, you can aim at a horse and get momentum and get running. So we've just hands and heels pushing away, Paul's come back upside me, and then once you've got to the elbow, I've gone for everything on him, and we've gone clear of Paul. But I never thought I might win this. The only thing going through my head was, I might lose this. That was the way it was. And I could hear you can't really hear the commentary of the crowd, but I heard Meeting the Waters come through my kind of consciousness. Thought, Danny's going to come and beat me now. Because I remember Neptune's Clown, Sunny Hill Boy, the last stride he got caught. And I was thinking, please don't let that happen to me. And it wasn't until we passed the line that I believed we'd won. You know, it was... I didn't want to lose it rather than I wanted to win it the whole way to the line.
There's a huge amount of physical exertion. You're trying to get the horse to give his last to win the Grand National. What is the feeling like then when you cross the line?
It's so funny because I two other winners on the weekend, and I sat on Gaelic Warrior and Greenspanner, and I pumped the air and whatever, pointed at the crowd, and I crossed the line on Nick Rocket, and it was just pure disbelief. You know, I didn't do anything. I just sat up and smiled. All I did was smile, because that was the only feeling, was just disbelief to think that I could win the Grand National. I mean, everyone dreams of it, but very few get to realise it. Yeah,
Marcus Armitage, 1990, was an amateur Mr. Frisk. These are the races you would have watched when you're a young lad. Growing up, you would have watched it. Probably watched Bobby Joe Papillon when you were a young boy, and think, oh, I'd love to be that person.
Yeah, and even Hedgehunter. I was 15 with Hedgehunter and going out there with Ruby, riding Hedgehunter. But it is funny as well that, say, Bobby Joe and Papillon, 1990-2000, there'd be no Irish winner since 1975. So 25 years nearly. Whereas now, when we went celebrating after Nick Rocket, we were in Brennan's pub in Lochinbridge by the bridge, and there was myself, Rachel Blackmore, Paul Townend, David Mullins and Emmett Mullins. There was 5 national winners in a pub, which for my father's generation would have been an impossibility. So like I said, just the way the whole wheel has turned, And I think for my father, that's probably why it meant as much as it meant to me, it meant as much again to him, you know.
We saw that with the interview with Matt Chapman after the race. Were you even aware of the emotion that he was showing?
No. I was wondering, where is he? I was thinking, why isn't he here? Like, so it was only when I met him later that I saw that he was quite caught up, you know, but I didn't realise the extent of it. But yeah, I think that added to the occasion for me, hugely. I think for everyone, it added to the occasion because, you know, Willie's quite a cool and calm, collected kind of guy. Like, and, you know, I think...
What did Willie and Jackie say to you afterwards? Like, the first thing they said to you?
I can't even remember. Yes. You know, my mother was very cool. She was there in the winner's enclosure. Eventually, we found Willie. But there wasn't really... I can't remember what was said. You
know? It was quite a poignant story because Stuart Andrew, the owner, his wife, I think she picked out the horse and she passed away.
Yes, so Sadie would have gone just to primary school. She would have done a communion with Willie in Gore's Bridge in County Kilkenny. And then she'd moved away and, you know, I think they hadn't seen each other in 40, maybe 50 years. And they met then at the races in Cheltenham. And Sadie said she'd like to have a horse with Willie. So they bought Nick Rocket. And in between her buying Nick Rocket and him running, she got very sick and passed away. And I think we actually ran Nick Rocket a week before she died. And he finished fifth in Fairy House. But, I mean, for Stuart... you know, and she still runs, Nick Rocket still runs with Stuart and Sadie Andrew as the owner. So for Stuart, there must have been huge emotion there. As much emotion as there was on our side, you know, that was a weird coincidence that the National can only really pull up, I think.
Tony Kelly, the Clare hurler last year when they won the All-Ireland, said, it's the best thing I'll ever do in the GAA. Do you think it's the best thing you'll ever do in racing?
Yeah, I wouldn't mind winning it a second time. So, I mean, I imagine that'll be better again, but it's definitely the best so far. I mean, look, Tiger Roll won two. Ruby Walsh has won two. And I know Derek Fox won two. I think not many guys have rode and trained a national winner. I know Willie hasn't rode and trained a national winner. So I think Fred Winter and Fulk Waller might have done it back in the 50s. So that's something maybe to try and do in the future.
Have you watched it back?
Just once or twice, yeah. Yeah, just once or twice. I actually, funnily enough, myself and Brian Hayes, who finished third in Grange Square West, we ended up watching it during the week, actually, for some random reason. But yeah, it saw plenty of replays, all right, yeah.
Just talk about some of the great horses you have in your yard. I mean, Galopin des Chances, I mean, two Cheltenham Gold Cups, Leopardstown Gold Cup, Punchestown Gold Cup, 11 grade ones over fences. He is really the horse of a lifetime in ways. What stands out about him? What makes him so special?
He's an incredible beast. I mean, for me, what sets him apart is the scope of his jumps. I mean, some of his jumps last year were just phenomenal. He's taking a stride out and going 3 foot up in the air. I mean, it's completely, it's not very, it expends a lot more energy than he should be expending. But I can't remember seeing a 3 mile chaser jump like that. The exuberance he has. And, you know, I think he could be said to be the best Irish chaser since Arkell. I mean, how do you define that? I don't know. But I mean, some of the performances he put in at Punchestown and Leopardstown have just been phenomenal.
And the Punchestown performance last season would give you confidence that maybe he could win three Cheltenham Gold Cups.
Yeah. I mean, look, there's been no triple Gold Cup winner in Ireland since Arkell in the 60s. So that's how hard it is. And you don't get many opportunities to do it. Alun Fodo had a chance and came up slightly short. Galopin had a chance, came up slightly short. He's 9 going 10. That's going to make life hard. It's I think the last 10-year-old to win it is maybe in the 90s.
Cool Dawn, maybe.
I think Cool Dawn, yeah. So it's not going to be easy, but I have no doubt he didn't turn up on the day in the Cheltenham Gold Cup. Whether he'd have beaten, I know what you're thinking anyway, I don't know. But I don't think the best version of Galopin des Chances turned up. And I think that because he likes to dominate races, but he couldn't even lie up with horses that he normally dominates from the word go. So that's where you get your hope. And as you say, the Punchestown rebuttal was mind-blowing.
22 lengths, amazing.
22 lengths, and he's done that in Leopardstown as well, you know.
The best chaser you ever had?
Yeah, look, I would...
Do you like making comparisons or not?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, they're all new opinions. Yes. I think on what he's achieved, yes. I mean, look, we all will have a soft spot in Close Hunting for Florida Pearl because he was the first.
Yes.
And he won four Irish Gold Cups and a King George and a Melling Chase. But I think Gallopin probably deserves to be the best chaser anyway.
Hurdler, Hurricane Fly?
Yeah, I think, Hurricane Fly is... whether, there's all sorts of questions about the level of his ability and if you're putting him in the pantheon of greats, but I mean, the career that he built to get beaten and come back to regain the champion hurdle, the last few races he won at Leopardstown, the crowd, when he was raging against the Diet of Light, when he was that older horse taking on all those young Our Connors and jet skis, and he was so brave, so tough, I don't think we'll see one quite like him again.
Away from the sport, Patrick, you're into your reading and your writing. So reading is something you've got a book for, is that correct?
Yeah, I love reading books, I always have. I was reading books at the Grand National when I was 7 or 8, but it's something I have always enjoyed doing. I don't know really where I got it from, but I know English was my only A1 in the Leaving Cert, so probably something to do with that.
What authors do you love reading? Do you have any kind of favourite authors that you...
I suppose a lot of my stuff, I love reading fantasy, kind of, Lord of the Rings, Game of Thrones, The Wheel of Time is a great, Robert Jordan is a great, great thing, but kind of, I love reading a lot of American sports writers from the 50s, 60s, 70s, particularly boxing. They got some access and some
Sweet
of the...
Sweet Science, this kind
yes,
of stuff.
Yes, AJ Liebling, and some of that stuff is fantastic. So yeah, I like reading. I like reading everything, to be honest. Yeah.
So when you talk about other sports, are you Manchester United? You touched upon earlier in the interview. Would you be a fan of everything? Would you watch boxing? Would you watch rugby? Would you watch Gaelic games?
Yes, but broadly, I don't go too deep into anything. I'd follow United for my sins, and but yeah, I mean, I'd watch the bigger. I might watch the All Irelands or. I was in Dr. Cullen Park the other day for O'Loughlin winning the Carlow County Championship, all right? So Carl Coughlin, a good friend of mine who's in a few syndicates with us, kicked the winning point in the last kick of the game, and that was magic. And, the lads got brought up into the village on the back of the trailer behind the tractor, and, that's what the GAA is all about. I dip in and out, yeah.
And you dip in and out of writing. You won the prestigious Derby Award for Writer of the Year last year, so you enjoy constructing a piece as well and thinking about how to put something together on print.
Yeah, I love writing. I'm very lucky in how I get to write. I get to write more or less about what I want when I want. So I don't. It's not a job. I don't have to do it every week, which make life very difficult. But I love taking bits from things I've read and putting those words or ideas into pieces. And like you said, constructing a piece, putting the paragraphs together, the sentences, taking out a word, putting in a sentence, taking out a whole paragraph, an idea. Where does it start? Where does it finish? What's the flow of it? I really enjoy constructing a piece and trying to make it a bit different as well, and maybe not trying to do it always. I'm not always trying to write in the same style. To try different things, and it might not work, but I'd rather it's a bit different than even if it's bad. I like changing things up a bit if I can.
So for the season ahead, we might ask you 3 horses to follow from the Willie Mullins yard, which you're assistant trainer to, Patrick. So maybe an obvious one. Give us an obvious horse to follow for the casual listener.
I think Gaelic Warrior has a great chance to go a cup. I think he's much more mature and settled now. I think going up in triple will help him. And Gallop and Sham sets the standard, but Gaelic is just a little bit younger, and he's probably going to go via the King George, and yeah.
In each way one, maybe something in the middle rank horse?
I'll give you two, but the sure. First one, but two for the big handicaps. I think Keita Bourbon and High Class Hero could both be Grand National type horses. They've got great profiles, quite similar to Nick Rocket. And like I said, Keita Bourbon, I don't think got to fulfil his potential last year, mainly because of me falling off him. I think, he's placed in Irish Grand National afterwards. He's a young horse, and High Class Hero the same. He was third in the same race Nick Rocket was in Sandown, and they're two for the bigger handicaps later in the season, whether it's English Nationals or Scottish Nationals or Irish Nationals.
And then a dark horse, maybe one of a bumper horse or something.
Yeah, dark horse. I think we have a very nice horse called Leader Dallier from France, and he's won 5 small races in France. His last race wasn't a small race, but he's just a beautiful horse, real good movement, very athletic, very relaxed. Light framed horse. Every time I see him on the gallop, I just catch my eye.
Very good. We'll put him in the notebook, Patrick. We've talked about the success you've had and Willie's had, and Aidan O'Brien and every all the jockeys you reeled off there and trainers that have won the Grand National, including your cousins. But is there anything about Irish racing you'd love to change? If you were the mayor for the day, you know what? This isn't working too well, or maybe this could be improved. Is there anything, so somebody in the coalface you'd like to maybe just see it done a bit differently?
Well, I think a simple thing. I think we need to change how we view races. I think the camera angles are still quite antiquated, and you know, I think people want to be interested in watching racing. It has to be interesting to watch, and sometimes we have these wide angle views, and the horses are just spots on the thing. And nowadays, between drone footage, head cam footage, I think in all those big races, all the big festivals, every jockey should have a head cam, and it should be like a case of press red button to ride in the race on Paul Town or Galton Champs or Rachel Blackmore or Minna Linder or something, you know. So I think the camera angles could be upgraded.
And for people to go racing, look, we can all watch it on the television, and there's some great meetings coming ahead, like you've got the Hatton's Grace Meetings Ferry House, the John Durkin at Punchestown coming up, and then you've got Leperstown at Christmas, Limerick at Christmas, the Dublin Racing Festival. What would be your advice to somebody who's never even been? I brought somebody close to me for the first ever time to the races last year. And a couple of years ago, I brought a Brazilian friend of mine who runs a bar to the races. He'd never seen an Irish race meeting. And I gave him a horse to back, and it was beginner's luck, and he backed a 10-1 winner the first race. So he's obviously hooked now. But for anybody who's never been, what is the attraction of going to a race meet?
I always think it's a day at the races. You know, it's different from other sporting events in that you have a couple of hours. It's not always... The competition isn't on all the time. So you can go with some friends, you know, you can get something nice to eat, you can have a few drinks. You can see the horses and the competitors in the ring before and after. You can get quite close, maybe closer than you can in other sports. And I think you should try to get down as well to the track, because, like I said, you can get close and feel the power, see the speed, make the most of the access that I think racing allows you to have.
So what are your future ambitions, Patrick? We talk about 1,000 winners. We talk, I think you want to ride a winner at every track in England. I'm sure there are some amateur races you'd still love to win, but obviously it's about being healthy and enjoying what you're doing.
Yeah, look, I have lots of things I want to do. I want to try to get 1,000 if I can. I think that'd be a pretty cool thing to do. The English tracks, there's 42 jumps tracks. I've ridden a winner at 17, so another 25 to go. So again, another 4 or 5 years. That'll be cool. Dennis O'Regan has done it where he's won all the Irish and all the English tracks. So it's not something that's done very often. And I like something to aim for. And it's an adventure. I like going to, you know, I know all the tracks in Ireland and all the people in Ireland. We're riding nearly 20 years now, which is a scary thought. So going to these tracks in England is like a bonus level of Mario Kart. You know, meet new people, meet new places, or see new places. I haven't ridden the winner of the Kim Muir in Cheltenham or the Aintree Fox Hunters in Aintree. I've been second in both of them. Maldini and Boxer George, so they're the one. And obviously, if you look, the ultimate dream is, Sam Willie Cohen was an amateur. He won the winner of the Grand National and the Gold Cup. So you know, I wouldn't mind getting a go on Gaelic Warrior in the Gold Cup.
Patrick Mullins, that is just a fantastic way to end the interview. Look, you're a gentleman. Thank you so much for coming in to Off the Ball here on News Talk and on the Racing Pod, and continued success. You're a real ambassador for the sport, and we really appreciate what you do for the Sport of Kings.
Yeah. Thanks very much, John.
Patrick Mullins there. We're back after this.
The Racing Pod.
On Off the Ball.
With William Hill. 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie. The Racing Pod.
On Off the Ball.
With William Hill. Who you got? 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.